Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Miss Paralegal, here to talk to you about a talk show on blogtalkradio.com, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Tune in each Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific. A full hour and a half of politics and everything that concerns your community. The comments, guests, and actions of this show has nothing to do with blogtalkradio.com or its sponsors. This commercial has been sponsored by The Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
Good evening. Welcome to The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, heard Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 5 until 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 8 until 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We always like to offer this brief disclaimer in the beginning of the show. Any comments and or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views and or opinions of the hosts, sponsors, or Blog Talk Radio. Our brief description of the show is, this show addresses community concerns in regard to designing ways members in communities can increase their abilities to acquire more income. In addition to that, methods to address increasing political strength and impact will also be featured. Financial enhancement, increasing political strength and impact, improving possibilities, or combining efforts with others who have similar interests, all these and more poignant concerns will be approached in an entertaining format. There will be musical segments, interesting guests, as well as questions and comments from our listening audience. If you have any interest in improving situations for our youth, such as STEM and incarceration estimates for minority members of the society or any members for the society, reassessing the significance of spiritual impact, investigating the best possible means of boosting knowledge for improving your health, as well as many pertinent topics too numerous to include in this introduction, just join us as we seek truth on The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Call us at 347-945-7040. That's 347-945-7040. Or you can email us at blakicz.1@gmail.com. Email at blakicz.1@gmail.com. We highly recommend that you consult professionals in the fields we refer to on this show. The information you hear on this show is meant to be a catalyst to encourage individuals to research topics that they find interesting.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we're free at last."
We got the change and the change came, we're alive. Obama, household name, put your boy in a brand new way. The rose of Mississippi singing them freedom songs. We got the spirit cause our God made it strong. Away with the promise, 30 acres and a mule. Nowhere in it to be so poor. Standing for the belief like I lead. Fighting in the unknown zone. Put away that strife, bring our truth back home. I wish Pop was alive. See the better day when the knee fell down and his hips broke down. Victory in the heart, so amazing where we start. In the midst of the pain, the rain came. Why did the seed preserve the same and not for the fame? War was less, but I must confess.
I'm free, like an eagle in the sky. It ain't no lie.
Civil rights movement, how we went from the slave ships to the president. The dream of Dr. King is what we represent. Our mind clean, nonviolent. We bring peace to the environment. And we love all men, women, and children. Not judging by the color of their skin. We blend, characterized by the content within. Equalized by the Constitution. Eyes on the prize to make a better union. Obama televised this revolution. Now we rise, our brother. Creeks and the lies for the solution. Open up your eyes, you're free as a
That if we dreamed and fought the fight, that one day we would never see the bloodshed fight and lose. And now we see the color lines to the red, white, and blue wide, with no color lines. The reality to the vision of a sleep eye. Once trapped at the bottom, now we fly high. And God's not done yet. If sunrise is victory, then never shall we sunset. We've paid many years and tears, and thank God we sweat, so it's already done. And we don't need a receipt for this one. We have to bring back. No, we can't.
I'm free, like an eagle in the sky. It ain't no lie.
Good evening and welcome to the next phase with Ice and Friends, 7:07 p.m. in West Texas. That, as always, was the Crosswalk Coalition. You can look them up on Facebook. They're a Christian rap group from the West Coast, out around somewhere around Los Angeles and thereabouts. My oldest son is a member of that group, and I think they do a wonderful job. And I want to say congratulations to your oldest son. And so if you want to take a look at some of the more of the things that they have to offer, they have some other tunes, several other tunes, and they do also engagements and whatever. That's Crosswalk, Crosswalk Coalition, Coalition, and you can find them on Facebook. So you might take a look and look those guys up. I think there are some ladies that are associated with it. Look those guys and ladies up, and give them a good listen to. Spare them just a little bit of your attention, and I think they will at least request more of your attention, with no doubts about it. You know, I'd like to take a moment in the beginning of this show to of silence for those individuals. I think somewhere around, if I'm not mistaken, the last number I heard was maybe 272 people who lost their loved ones. The 272 people passed away, and that, you know, the loss of life, as well as the impact on the families and communities, as well as the state, as well as the national community, probably the international community as well, is horrendous. It's very difficult, but nevertheless, we have to continue to persevere. But if I could ask a moment of silence for those individuals who went through that horrific event over the last several hours. And I really appreciate that observation. And sincerely, I would ask, if you are a person who is of a particular faith, I've been involved in a discussion today earlier about some people who are iconoclastic, some people are iconoclast, some people are agnostic, some people are atheist, some people have different faiths other than Christianity, understandably so. Whatever your faith is, we would ask that you would humbly require that whomever your higher power is, if it's yourself,
that you would offer some consideration for those individuals who are suffering today as a result of their losses over the past several hours. And I wrote up a tiny little article today. What it starts out, what it says is, I would like to ask, which I just did, for a moment of silence for the victims and families of the victims who perished as a result of the storms that passed through several states yesterday, last evening and early this morning. What we are about to witness, however, is in the aftermath of those powerful storms is socialism at its very best. States that don't have the financial resources to address the tremendous fiscal demands foisted upon them over the past several hours and our days and weeks can request assistance from all of us, the inhabitants of the United States of America, in addressing their critical needs, providing human as well as pecuniary support to assist in restoring those things are replaceable and hopefully reducing the stress in considering the things that are things and friends, family, and others who are irreplaceable. May God bless. God is whom I choose to call my higher power. May God bless and comfort those who suffer, who suffered loss as well as a result of the horrific events over the past several hours. And I found an article. I don't know. This article, I think, addresses one specific area. And this article is the AlabamaAL.com. And this particular article was published Thursday, today, April 28, 2011, 1:43 p.m., updated the today at 1:48 p.m. It's by Christine Neidinger at AL.com. It says, "Eclectic Alabama, the community is trying to pick up the pieces from the violent line of storms that raced through the evening last night, leaving six people dead and countless others injured in the area by Lake Martin. By daybreak, residents of the demolished Middle Road Mobile Home Park had begun to pick up the remaining pieces of their lives, trying to find their belongings amid the rubble from 25 flattened homes. The park was home to four people among the dead, one a school bus driver in Elmore County who was killed in her home, along with her grown daughter. Steve Thornton, 46, was one of the first people to arrive after the storm and described the scene as a pure nightmare and in the pitch black of darkness. Quote, unquote, I pulled up and I heard people screaming, and then I saw two women laying in the road, not moving, just holding each other. Unquote. Thornton said he believed that two women were among those who died, which was confirmed by mourning relatives, Mike Browning, who was at the site surveying the damage today. With the news of the deaths, Browning drove from Bonifay, Florida, to help tend one woman's two children taken to Birmingham for treatment overnight. They are expected to recover, Browning said. Quote, unquote, we just really need everyone's prayer and support as we recover from our losses that were so unexpected, unquote, says Browning. Across the park, 16-year-old Tabby Marlowe was sorting through piles of debris shortly after her hospital release. She still had EKG monitor sensors on her chest and a hospital bracelet. She searched for anything belonging to her family. She found her soiled dress for prom on Friday evening. Everything's gone. We've got nothing, she said. We had, quote, unquote, we just paid our first month's rent at a house by the lake and had everything packed in boxes ready to move. Now we have nothing, no car, furniture, just 1 month's rent and an empty house, unquote. She said that her mobile home flipped five times, violently jolting the three people in her house. When she stepped out of the crumbled, debris, empty, handed this morning, she tearfully talked not of memories of the stuff gone, but of things she would like to forget. I saw too many dead people here last night. It was terrifying. Some families, the 40-year-old Tammy Adams and her 12-year-old son, Stephen Bush, were able to escape. Some families, like 40-year-old Tammy Adams and her 12-year-old son, Stephen Bush, were able to escape harm's way by relocating before the storm. The two Middle Road residents went to Montgomery to ride out the storm instead of staying in their trailer. Quote, unquote, I got a call at around 4 a.m. this morning saying that our home was gone. It just makes me realize how you should never believe that you are your possessions are indestructible, because they are, and ours are gone forever, said Adams, quote, unquote. Elmore County Sheriff's Department Chief Deputy Ricky Lowry confirmed this afternoon that six people in the eclectic area died last night. When he arrived at the scene moments after the storm last night, it was pure mayhem, quote, unquote. Quote, unquote, I've never seen anything like the tragic acts of nature like that, and I know it will never, and it will forever change the lives of all involved last night, unquote, said Lowry. Quote, it was bad, but it could have been so much worse if we didn't have the support of so many first responders in the area to help aid the wounded, unquote. Lowry said that he did not know exactly how many people were injured, but expects to have a firm count by Thursday afternoon, which I don't have the update on that. More than 160 people have been confirmed dead thus far from the 137 documented tornadoes that ripped through Alabama during a Wednesday storm. Anyway, that was some information that I got as a result of just being curious about the incidents that occurred, and it was on the AlabamaAL.com. The lady that wrote that story was Christine Neidinger at Alabama.com. Looking further through some of the things that we have for you this evening, there was one article that was extremely interesting for me, and I took the opportunity to grab this article and hopefully relate it to you, and hopefully you might find some interest in it as well. This article is Misunderstanding Jesus' Execution. I found it on consortium.com by Reverend Howard Bess, April 23rd, 2011. Editor's note, because Western civilization embraced Christianity as a ruling religion, the teaching of Jesus lost much of their insurrectionist, pacifist, and egalitarian origins. In effect, Christianity was bent to the interests of kings, politicians, generals, and the rich. Similarly, the stories of Jesus faithful last week in Jerusalem has been reshaped to minimize perhaps the central event, his overturning of the money tables at the temple, a direct challenge to the merging of religious and political powers of his day. As the Reverend Howard Bess recounts in this guest essay, Christians have special celebrations for the key events of Holy Week, but they often overlook one of the most important. Palm Sunday celebrates the entry of Jesus into the city of Jerusalem. Monday, M-A-U-N-D-Y-D-A-Y, Monday, Thursday, is a solemn replay of his last meal with his disciples. Good Friday takes us through his mock trial and his death or horror on a Roman cross. Easter is the Christian's triumphant celebration of Jesus' resurrection from the dead. But there is a missing piece. The incident that gives sense to the week's climactic events is Jesus' overturning of the money tables at the temple. Tradition says that the incident was a ceremonial cleansing of the temple of its commercial enterprises, because those in charge of the temple had turned a house of worship into a commercial enterprise. Jesus disrupted the commercial operation by upsetting the tables where the temple lackeys sold required animals for sacrifice. However, modern scholarship is putting an emphasis on understanding this historical incident in context. The first piece of the puzzle is the temple itself. For nearly half a century, including the time of Jesus' birth, Herod the Great had ruled Palestine as an ambitious king appointed by Rome's Caesar. Herod was a mixed racial background and claimed some Jewish blood. He wanted to be known as King of the Jews, but acceptance by the Jews was difficult to attain. Herod the Great also was a builder. Under his reign, he built civic buildings and ports, but the greatest building project, was the rebuilding, expansion, and refurbishing of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. It was known as Herod's Temple, or is sometimes referenced as the Third Temple. Because of that history, the reign of Herod and the operation of the temple were linked and locked. It was near inseparable joining of government and religion. To offend one was to offend both. Herod the Great died in 4 CE when Jesus was still a child. During the years of Jesus' teaching ministry, Herod's son, Herod Antipas, was the ruler. The joining of kingdom and temple continued. Jesus grew up and taught in rural areas 70 miles north of Jerusalem. His faith was shaped not by Jerusalem and the temple, but by weekly gatherings of the community elders as they read Torah, Jewish law, and discussed its meaning. Jesus and his followers had limited contact with Jerusalem's social, political, and religious leaders, mostly through the retainers and forces of Herod's rule, a Roman rule, who also represented the Jerusalem temple. Retainers made regular trips to the rural north to collect tithes and taxes. To understand Jesus, one must realize the depth of his contempt for both the rule of Herod and the religious rulers of the temple. To further understand Jesus in the last week of his life, the student needs to realize that the Old Testament contains not one religious tradition, but two. One called the Great Tradition, the other called the Smaller Lesser Tradition. The greatest tradition is the definition of society laid down by those who rule and enforced by the retainers. The Great Tradition is centered in cities in which the controlling institutions are located. For Jesus, that place was Jerusalem. There is no evidence that Jesus ever visited Jerusalem as an adult before the last week of his life. The Small Tradition is a critiquing and competing interpretation of life. It almost always arises with avowed believers who have escaped the burden of the Great Tradition and its demand for conformity. Northern Palestine, 70 miles removed from Jerusalem, was a hotbed for the Small Tradition. The leaders of the Small Tradition found heroes in Isaiah, Jeremiah, Amos, Micah, and other Old Testament prophets. Almost every one of the Old Testament prophets was a critic of those who controlled the temple in Jerusalem. John the Baptizer was the first of the Little Tradition prophets presented in the gospel narratives. His harsh criticism of rulers led to his death. Jesus took up the mantle. As modern Testament scholars have reconstructed the context in which Jesus lived and taught, they have realized that Jesus was not simply a religious figure. He was a severe critic of those who control the temple, those who control the empire, and those who control the economic systems that starved and robbed the poor and left the orphan and widows to fend for themselves. To Jesus, these issues were all tied together. Jesus was a largely unknown and harmless critic as long as he remained in his northern rural setting. He was clearly an apocalyptic preacher. He advocated overthrow of a corrupt system. He believed the days of the oppressors were numbered, but he believed the overthrow could be accomplished by love, mercy, and kindness. Jesus took his apocalyptic message to Jerusalem. However, to call his arrival a triumphant entry is to miss the point completely. He chose to enter Jerusalem riding a donkey as a mockery of the ruler's horse. It was an ancient form of street theater that Jesus and his followers used to make their point. The Great Tradition that was accepted by Jerusalem's masses was being publicly taunted by a figure of Small Tradition. But the critical point of Jesus' visit to Jerusalem came when he visited the temple. In no sense had he come to worship and make sacrifice. He came to disrupt and to make pronouncements about the judgment of God on the whole operation. Jesus did not go to the temple to cleanse. He came to the temple to announce the destruction of a whole way of life. Those who operated the temple had no power to silence Jesus, but to put him to death, and had no power to silence Jesus and to put him to death, and put him to death, excuse me. Those powers were held by the Roman retainers. The charges that were leveled against him can be summed up as insurrection. There were three specific charges: encouraging non-payment of taxes, threatening to destroy property, the temple, and claiming to be a king. It was the temple incident that took Jesus from being an irritating but harmless country rebel from the rural north to a nuisance in the city that controlled the great tradition. Rome's retainers killed him on a cross. The theological meaning of the series of events remains in our own hands. However, the key understanding, the week of Jesus' crucifixion, is the incident at the temple. And this was by the Reverend Howard Best, a retired American Baptist minister who lives in Palmer, Alaska. And his email is hdbss@mtaonline.net. hdbss@mtaonline.net. And we'll be back. We'll be right back with more of the show right after this.
My breath is running out, but I don't care. I'm sweating out my hair, but I don't care. 'Cause God's up in here, it's my all that I give. He's the reason I live. He gives me all my breath. I give my presence to you. Without you, what would I do? I thank for all that you are. Hallelujah.
And the angels through the door pray. This is time to dance. Around, amazing grace. Another day that I praise, I fall to my face. It's all the way live, I'll leap to the sky. I'm out of breath, and I can't stop why. He's been so good, he keeps it me. Shut up on the rain, not in the street. Somewhere under a tree could be you and me, you and me.
With my own.
Running out, but hands like I'm giving high ten, lifting my voice up, 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 up to the heavens with my sisters and brethren. He ain't refreshing, we praise the Lord, he is our blessing. Going and get up into your resurrection, give God the praise, this is perfection. In the crosswalk, we keeping you stepping, we give God our all with love and affection.
It's my all.
Welcome. I'm Miss Paralegal, here to talk to you about a talk show on blogtalkradio.com, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Tune in each Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific, a full hour and a half of politics and everything that concerns your community. The comments, guests, and actions of this show has nothing to do with blogtalkradio.com or its sponsors. This commercial has been sponsored by The Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
As always, I want to thank Ms. Paralegal, a wonderful lady who did that promo for me. She's a consummate professional in my eyes, and I really appreciate her being so resourceful and sharing that. Charitable enough to share that with me, and I really appreciate her, Ms. Paralegal. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Prior to that was the Crosswalk Coalition again, CrossWalkCoalition, Crosswalk Coalition. That's my son's associated, my oldest son's associated with that group in California out on the West Coast. I'd like to say hello to Ms. Bronze and Gold in the chat room and SK. HMT, thank you for joining us right here on The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. As always, please feel free to give us a call if you choose to, 347-945-7040, 347-945-7040, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. And you can drop us an email at blakicz.1@gmail.com. Brother Alfo, there I see you. How you doing? Welcome to the show. Brother Alfo's in the room, in the house. Thank you, sir, for joining us right here on The Next Phase. And you know you're always welcome to call through, Brother Alfo, 347-945-7040. And I'll be looking forward to hearing from you if you choose to. I wanted to do something right quick, as I always do, but I tried to jump off into the show as quick as I could recently. But I always like to recognize some of the hosts that I've had the pleasure of meeting. Blog Talk Radio, some of the most wonderful people that I've ever met in my entire life. Well, not really met, but I've met them online. And let me start off by mentioning Ms. Rabia Ahmed, the organizer of SMART, Single Mothers Are Really Trying, a program in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, designed to assist especially women and their families who have had difficulties in their lives. The program actually aids the women and their families in regaining their social and financial footing. Sister Rabia Ahmed does significantly more than just talk, and I want to thank her, as always, for her sharing. Let me be remiss if I didn't mention Brother One in a Million last week called through. Thank you, sir, for calling through. And also Sister Chatologist was in the room last week. Thank you for joining us. And I think got to be me. I think she was there last week, if I'm not mistaken. And also Sister Rabia called through last week. So, listen, again, SMART2CHANGE. That's www.SMART2CHANGE.com in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania. And it's designed to assist mothers and their children. Also, I'd love to always mention my sister, India Declare. She stopped through last week, and thank you so much, dear sis, for stopping through. India Declare show, heard daily, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, Monday through, I believe, Friday now. I don't think she's on Saturday, but I'm not sure. You can check her out at BLOG, Blog Talk Radio. Come to blogtalkradio.com and type in INDIADECLAIR, India Declare, and it'll give you the information in that search block, all the relevant information that you need to find your sister India. But as far as I know, she comes on at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, and that's daily, Monday through Friday. I believe I'm right. Hopefully I am. And I did see Sister Navazar. She stopped through earlier this evening, and I got a chance to listen to her show the other day. And she was visiting with a doctor. I can't remember who the lady's name was, but they were playing some wonderful music. Sister Navazar, Navaxor1, and she's on Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard, 5 p.m. Central. Stop through. You will not be disappointed. Should I say? You'll not be disappointed if you take a listen to her show. Let me also suggest that you check out Miss Janice Graham, G-A-A-N-I-C-E, Janice Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, Janice Graham. Type her into the search block at Blog Talk Radio, and you'll find her with, she has a network, and Brother Alpha, I think, is a part of that network, and I think she has a show opposite mine right now, and I think there is not enough information available, so I appreciate whatever she does with her network. And always glad to mention her and her shows. For sure, I know she comes on Saturday at 10 p.m., and I'll get to Brother Alpha here in just a second. He's a little bit further down the list. Janice, J-A-N-I-C-E, Janice, G-R-A-H-A-M. Type it in the search block on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll find the information necessary to find her show. Wonderful, as always, very informative and up-to-date, upbeat. Miss Quiet Storm, she has a wonderful show as well. She's been away for a little bit, I think. She's working on a book. Let me say congratulations to you, sis. I hope everything works out with you and that book. Generally, you can catch her on Saturdays, 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Mountain, 11 a.m. Central, 12 a.m. Eastern. That's Miss Quiet Storm. You can Google her at www.msquietstorm, missquietstorm.com. Or you can type her in the search block at Blog Talk Radio, Miss Quiet Storm. And I don't think you'll be disappointed at all. She has a lot to do with the youth, trying to to assist the youth in finding their better selves. As all of us, that's, I think, the initial thrust of a lot of us, is to protect and to reach out to our youth and assist them in establishing themselves in as best a position they can in the world today. You know how difficult that is, I'm sure. And that's Miss Quiet Storm. Also, Dr. Reba, the Dr. Reba, R-E-B-A, the D-R, Dr. Reba, the Covenant Connection. And you can find her at www.rebahaley.com. And she's recently written a book. The book is The Covenant Connection, Your Best Marriage Now. So check her out. I think you'll be pleasantly rewarded. As you take a look at the information that she can provide, the assistance and encouragement, inspiration as well. Miss Blue, how you doing, Miss Blue? I don't know, haven't talked to her in a while, but she has Blue Crystal. And you can find that at 641, area code 641-715-3800. And the access code is 10569. Let me say it again. And if you want to look her up on Blog Talk Radio, type in MSBLUE, Miss Blue. And, again, Blue Crystal at 641-715-3800, access code 10569. And that is Know Your Magic. And the line is open for everyone in the universe. And she's a life coach and has wonderful information, insightful and interesting as well. Brother Alpho, 2 p.m. Saturdays, 2 p.m. Saturdays on the Truth Network. And you can type in A-L-F-O, Brother Alpho, in the Blog Talk search block, and it'll give you information relevant and pertinent to him and what he does. He's an exciting guy with a tremendous amount of information. And I won't say he's argumentative, but he will defend his position. Also, I got a chance to check out Miss Carlotta Chatwood and her show. And she says it has entertainment, politics, and relationships. And I still didn't get the time, but I'll be working on that, getting the time for you. But anyway, C-A-R-L-O-T-T-A, Carlotta Chatwood, C-H-A-T-W-O-O-D. And she has, I think, a couple hosts with her, a co-host. And they do a wonderful job at discussing topics that will be of supreme interest to you, I'm sure. And I'll work on getting, making sure I get that information to you. I didn't neglect it. I overlooked it. So we'll get more about her show as time goes along. Harlem Talk Radio, Thursdays at 2 p.m. Harlem, H-A-R-L-E-M, Talk Radio, Thursdays at 2 p.m. We are friends, and I get a chance to visit their show on occasion. I really appreciate them. Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys. And that's Blog Talk Radio. These are some of the hosts that you'll get a chance to listen to when you come to Blog Talk Radio. The Original Poetry, After Dark, Old School Battle. That's by D. Poetess. D-P-O-E-T-E-S-S. D. Poetess. And she's on Fridays and Thursdays at 11 p.m. until 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. 10 p.m. until 12 a.m. Central Standard Time. The Original Poetry, After Dark, Old School Battle by D, that's just the letter D, P-O-E-T-E-S-S, D. Poetess, Fridays and Thursdays, 11 until 1 Eastern Standard Time. Also had a chance to meet a young lady online in the process. I think it was in D. Poetess's room, Candy the Poetress. And Candy the Poetress, you can find her on Facebook, and she does an extremely good job. And these are the poetess is spoken word poet, as well as I think she has strengths in other areas as well. And so does Candy the Poetress. Very, very talented young ladies. A pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for allowing me your acquaintance. Then I got a chance to listen to one show called Reach Out Job Search. That was a good show. Host Monica R.W. It's Thursdays at 6 p.m. So that was early. I didn't get a chance to check it out. Jay Early, J-A-Y-E-A-R-L-E-Y, is also a host. Gary McCants, also a host. And you can catch Keith Oberman on Current TV. Again, thank you. We appreciate you joining us right here on the next phase with Ice and Friends. Let me do this right quick. Let me check the board and see if I have no calls right now. So let me play something for you that I got a chance to record. And this is information about the show that was on. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but it was a show on MSNBC, and it was hosted by a guy named Ed Schultz. And I got a chance to take some snippets of this show. I'd like to share those with you, and if you have a reaction to these snippets, give us a call, 347-945-7040. This is a snippet, and I hope you can hear it. I hope I did a good job of recording it, but we're going to give it a shot, so take a listen to this and see what you think.
Healthcare, job discrimination, education, equality across the board. Everything that you have done in your career has been for equality, has been for opportunity for all. But moving forward, what's the climate going to be like? What's the fight going to be like? What's it going to be like moving forward as opposed to some of the things that you've had to do in the past?
Well, I think that what we did in the past, we did based on what we had to do. And there's none of the situations I got in I wouldn't get in. I would just know how to fight and deal with them more strategically. Which goes back to the point that we were discussing with Dr. Mm-hmm. West. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of what I'm trying to say is in the spirit of what Velma said. I think, yes, the president has to be held accountable, and the president said that when he spoke at National Action Network. But I think that too many of us are putting it all on the president. If I see a Ryan in Congress, where's the counterpoint to Ryan? That's not President Obama's job. He shouldn't lead the civil rights marches against himself.
Robert, what about
the
that?
The churches, the academic, everybody's like sitting around acting like we can't do nothing, Obama should do it. That's hogwash.
I agree with you. Look, we need foot soldiers on the ground that's going to be able to do all the heavy lifting. There's no question about it. I guess my point simply wasn't, look, I'm just the messenger, is that a lot of folks on Capitol Hill, and I'm talking more about the more progressive wing of the party, that are saying, I'm tired of doing all of the hard work and not having the administration defend me. I'm tired of doing all the heavy lifting, and then thus in the process, the next day at the podium,
well,
the White House
leadership.
Well,
that's what
I need to understand. Is because the fact of the matter is, each of them were elected by a constituent base.
I agree.
Each of them should stand on their own, while the party should support each other, at the end of the day, they should be held accountable for their own actions, and they should be accountable.
The problem is this, that they have a black constituency, and there's a context in the nation that a criticism of President Obama is an attempt to support right-wing vicious attacks of Fox News and others.
Let me tell you something, brother. I love this brother
when he was outside. I love this brother giving his access, but I tell you this, I worry about your brother because you could be easily manipulated by those in the White House who do have the interests of Wall Street oligarchs, who do have the interests of corporate plutocrats, and you oppose, but you end up being the public face. And if Barack Obama ends up just being another black mascot of these Wall Street oligarchs, you will be in a world of trouble.
That I'm the one out there in the trenches at the labor rallies and during the marches. You just saw that while a lot of people are sitting around inside their ivory towers talking. Because I don't buy what you just said, Cornell.
Wait a minute.
When you talk about a lot of those blacks in Washington don't want to challenge the presence of these blacks.
Because the black community
Let me finish. They will represent those same communities when they supported George Bush on the Iraq war, and only one black woman, Barbara Lee, voted against the war. They were scared then, and they're scared now. If you're scared, say you're scared. Don't blame that on Obama. You're scared to stand up for the people.
Why did they vote for Bush? Do you have a critique of Obama, or are you?
My critique of Obama was very clear. That President Obama, you want my critique?
Yes.
Let me give you the critique.
Yes.
My critique of President Obama is he must bring about policies that will employ us equally, that will deal with our education and reform.
Where's the job deal?
That's what I'm asking you. Your friends in Congress that sit around waiting on President Obama to write a bill to go in Congress, that's their job.
Kanye's got a job bill ready.
Look at it this way, this is a joke. Y'all are making excuses for people that have been there 40 years and have done nothing. We're talking about black suffering that has always been there, that many of them have now become all of a sudden want to come and jump on this president and sat there and not. Look, I'll give you an example.
We got young black brothers in New York City. Over 72% of them been stopped and frisked by the police.
And who fought them? Where were the congressional commissioners? How come the critics are worried about it when it comes to New York? And neither have the investment
banker was stopped and frisked. He say something.
All right. And obviously, a lot of these Ivy League colleges have said
we've been stopped and frisked. They'd be doing that. These guys are great at being
so. We've got
to
go. Thank you, Velma Hart. Thank you, Robert Graham. Thank you, Cornell West.
Let me introduce my friend and colleague for this show today, Reverend Al Sharpton, a leader in civil rights his entire life. Reverend Sharpton, thanks for being here. You have just completed the first 20 years of the National Action Network, had a wonderful conference here in New York this week. The timing is so important right now. The things that you have been discussing with your team, the National Action Network, and the problems that we are facing, all centered around this budget that's coming up, this budget debate. What was accomplished this week?
Well, I think that we, first of all, let me thank you, Ed, and I'm glad to be with you. This is the second consecutive year you put national focus on what a lot of people don't want to talk about. And that's what we dealt with at National Action Network's conference this week, the continued disparity based on race in this country, but how it weakens the country. It's not just about what it does to the black community. Clearly it is that, but it weakens the country, how we deal with that. The president came, members of the cabinet, but leadership, faith leaders, grassroots leaders, how we deal with the economic divide. We are still doubly unemployed. How we deal with disparities in education and in health care. And as the timing of this budget debate happened this week, You must look at the fact that we look at it differently because we are disproportionately impacted. It's like how a chicken and a pig looks at a ham and bacon, egg and bacon sandwich. One loses an egg, the other loses a leg. We lose the leg in the budget cuts. Others contribute an egg. So we look at this a whole lot more personally because you're talking, when you're talking about cutting job creation, it is going to be double that. Job training, double that for us. I think that if we are saving Pell Grants, which I understand that's a good thing, I think if we're saving some of the other things that have been mentioned, fine. But we must understand that whatever comes out is going to be double that for us. How do we deal with that? And it weakens this country, and that's what we're going to discuss.
How do we deal with that? That's what we're going to be talking about in the next couple hours. Thank you, Reverend. I appreciate that. Let's bring in our first panel today. Mark Morial is the president and CEO of the National Urban League. Karen Finney is a Democratic strategist and former DNC communications chairman and MSNBC political analyst. And Ben Jealous is president and CEO of the NAACP. Also joining us through these 2 hours, NBC News correspondent Mara Schiavacampo. She is going to give us a breakdown on some of the topics that we'll be talking about, beginning with what has been playing out in Washington this past week. Mara, what does this mean for the black community?
Well, Ed, last week, President Obama kicked off his reelection campaign, a move African-American voters overwhelmingly support. The African-American unemployment rate is 15.5%. That's about double the national average. So Republican efforts to limit unemployment benefits are a tough sell with the black community. Then there's health care. It's estimated that 20% of blacks do not have health insurance compared to 12% of whites. An estimated 30 million low-income voters in the black and Latino community will benefit from the health care reform bill, so Republican efforts to repeal that legislation are also unpopular with African Americans. When it comes to blacks in politics, there's one final trend that's interesting to note as well, the Great Migration in reverse. The percentage of blacks living in the South is at its highest point since 1910. Just think about that. The last time there were more blacks living in the South, William Taft was president. Younger and more educated African Americans are moving out of declining cities in the Northeast and Midwest in search of opportunities in the South. So how does that affect elections? Well, those African American Democratic votes may be less effective in the southern red states. Ed, back to you.
Thank you, Mara. Now to our panel. There's certainly a lot to take in. The numbers are undeniable. Karen Finney, as this budget, if it passes, if it goes through, how can the black community respond to it?
You know, one of the things I was disappointed about, if you look at the black community, just our sheer numbers, there would be no Barack Obama without blacks, Latinos, Asians, and the youth vote. But that's, we don't use our political power to those numbers. And if you look at the budget that was passed, we're the ones who really got hurt the most in this budget. So I think what the black community needs to do is really change the paradigm and have a new coalition so that we are, I mean, our issues are America's issues, and we need to be at the forefront. We need to not be at the bottom sort of asking for our piece of the pie.
We were talking in the opening, Mark, about sacrifice. There doesn't seem to be any sacrifice being orchestrated or put on the table as far as planning is concerned for the top 2% in this country. Where is the sacrifice?
I think that what you have is a bit of a farce in the argument.
The farce is that somehow if you eliminate, cut back on programs that help people, that is a route to a more prosperous nation. And I think we've got to challenge that narrative, the narrative that somehow spending or investments on education, job training, and health care have caused the problems for the nation. See, I think that one of the big issues is what are we going to do coming out of this recession? Are we going to seek to have prosperity for all? Or are we going to seek to create a nation that continues to shift wealth, dollars, and investments upward?
Ben Jealous, the Republican plan is going to cost, and this is what Moody says, is going to cost 700,000 jobs if these cuts go through. Well, and of course, in the budget cuts that are on the table right now, job training for lower income Americans is also being cut. How do you structure the fight back on this? Where's the political power? I mean, isn't it, in a sense, time for black America to turn to those who are well associated with the black community and say, hey, you got to stand up for us. Aren't we at that time?
Well, that's what we're doing. I mean, that's what One Nation last fall was about. That's what We Are One this week was about. You know, we've got to test this theory that's run through politics in this country, that the best friends of poor black folks are rich white people. The best friends of poor white people are rich white people. You know, we've got to get to a place where working people of all colors realize that their best friends in politics should be people who have exactly the same interest as them. And
well,
that's why we've worked so hard to pull people together.
I think Ben's point is right where we need to be, which is why a lot of us are mobilizing and did last year. Let us not forget that the pushback on the Tea Party came from black organizations, civil rights groups. Ed, you joined us with the Reclaim the Dream, with Mark, Ben, and all of us with the One Nation. I think Karen is right. We have to expand that coalition, and we've got to hold everybody accountable.
But in the midst of all of that, there was a great rally. There was tremendous conversation. Well, months later, here's a draconian budget.
Mark? This is the fact. There was a bit of a letdown after 2008. 2008 was a watershed of activism, enthusiasm, rallying around the president. There was a letdown in the 2010 cycle. People were weary. We had been through a recession. Job losses, people very focused on simply trying to survive. It's very important to recognize that the Tea Party and the Tea Party's interests have constructed a narrative that the biggest challenge facing the nation is its budget deficit. Not the biggest challenge facing the nation is its joblessness, is the Academic Achievement Act, is the millions of Americans without health care. We've got to raise a conversation about the future. This is about the future of the nation. It's not about yesterday. It's not about 2008. It's about what kind of nation we want to have in a 2020, a 2030, a 2040.
But I think as part of that future, look at America's classrooms. We have a majority of classrooms in this country where you have more non-white students than white students. So what you're talking about and what Ben's talking about and what the Reverend's talking about, that is America's economic future.
Right.
This is not just a nice to do for black folks or brown folks. This is our country we're talking about.
It is. But we have to ask the question, who's going to do the heavy lifting in Washington for those who are being, for lack of a better term, picked on in this budget?
The people that did the heavy lifting that sent everyone to Washington. And I think what happened, to elaborate on Mark's point, is that a lot of us felt when we won 08 that was it. And we lost a tremendous amount of seats in the midterm. Let's not act like it's magic what happened here. What happened here is the Republicans gained a majority. Many of us were expecting President Obama to walk on water and be a messiah, and we went to sleep rather than continuing the movement we started in 08.
But
you can't blame him.
We didn't vote in 2010 like we did in 2008.
Exactly right.
But politically, his support is somewhat eroding. In a Gallup poll and combined daily tracking for March, President Obama's approval among African Americans moves to 85%, which is a new low. Among Hispanics, it's 54%, matching his lows. And he holds steady among whites at 39%. Reverend, he has to step up, does he not, for the black community?
I think that he has to step up, but I think that others must step up. And we also must remind people how we got here. What I think that is the most, to me, a frightful thing is this amnesia, is that we act as though the people that advocated trickle-down economics, who are advocating it now, are not the ones that caused the deficit. So they're saying, let me get this right. Trickle-down economics will save you. Trickle-down economics caused the economic meltdown. Now the same people are coming in with the same prescription, and we want to blame the doctor rather than the bad prescription.
All right.
That was some information from the Black Agenda on MSNBC. I don't know if you got a chance to check that out when it was on. I didn't get a chance. I had a chance, but I forgot about it. So what I've done is I've gotten some snippets of it, and I'll be playing them throughout the month of May and trying to get some reaction from you about it. But in the meantime, what I'll do is I'll refer to an article that was provided to me by Sister Cosmic Energy today. I got a chance to, I was in a chat room, and she was, she had posted this information up. After I go through this this little bit of information and another couple of articles, then I'll give you an opinion that I have on it. You may or may not agree with it. But anyway, this is the next phase with Ice and Friends. and heard 7 until 8:30 p.m. on Thursdays. If you want to give us a call, 347-945-7040. 347-945-7040. And if you want to drop us a line, it's blakicz.1@gmail.com, blakicz@gmail.com. This article is from Alternet. It's by Think Progress. Main Street Rage. Americans protest awful GOP budget plan at town hall meetings around the country. This week, town hall anger went from a few isolated incidents to a daily deluge of passion and temper from Americans frustrated with their out-of-touch representatives. April 27, 2011, at town hall events across the country, Americans are confronting members of Congress who voted for the House Republican radical budget, which effectively ends Medicare, slashes Medicaid, hacks away at domestic spending, and extends tax breaks for the wealthy. The entire House GOP caucus, except for four lawmakers, voted for Representative Paul Ryan, that's the Republican from Wisconsin's budget earlier this month, claiming a mandate from the November elections to drastically reduce domestic spending. But Republicans went beyond any semblance of responsible budget tightening to a radical destruction of core pillars of the health, safety, and security of the country. Recent polls show Americans are firmly opposed to Ryan's budget proposal, with over 70% of Republicans opposing cuts to Medicare, while over 80% of Americans overall disapproval of the cuts to social safety net programs. And Americans are clearly demonstrating their displeasure with their GOP lawmakers who are in their home districts for this month on recess from Congress. So if you get a chance to get out and meet your Republican a lawmaker who's home for recess, give him a little bit of your opinion. Last week, as lawmakers began holding their town hall sessions in the districts, a number of Washington commentators wondered, quote-unquote, if Ryan's budget is so unpopular, where are the town hall meltdowns? This week, the Washington commentarist got their answer as town hall anger went from a few isolated incidents to a daily deluge of passion and temper from Americans frustrated with their out-of-touch representatives. The town halls, like the opposition to the GOP budget more generally, were slow to begin, in part because Ryan was so quick to act. While President Obama and congressional Democrats allowed for over a year of debate, study and discussion on their health care reform law, House Republicans unveiled and voted on their plan to radically transform Medicare in a matter of weeks, giving opponents almost no time to mobilize against it or educate Americans about its effects. Moreover, those opposed to Ryan's plan don't have the constant cheerleading of a right-wing talk radio and Fox News, as well, may I include, corporate, KKKOPORATE, corporate media, which directly helped organize and promote 2009 town halls. Nonetheless, as part of what the Progress Report has dubbed a Main Street movement of average Americans upset that conservatives want to cut social services and public investment for everyday people while lavishing tax breaks on the wealthy and corporations. Americans are standing up to their lawmakers, finally standing up to their lawmakers on their own. Medicare. Many of the town hall protests this month have targeted freshman Republicans from swing districts who were voted into office in last November's GOP wave. While voters may have wanted to send a message to Washington by electing a Republican, they have been dismayed by how radically right-wing their new congressmen have turned out to be. One of the first documented town hall protest last week was at a stop of freshman Republican Patrick Meehan, Republican of Pennsylvania. During the campaign, Meehan assured his future constituents that he wouldn't vote for Ryan's agenda. But once in office, he did just that. Meehan was asked about entitlement reform and Medicare at nearly every town hall he went to last week, while, with constituents' anger visible. By the weekend, freshman Representatives Robert Dold, Republican of Illinois, Charlie Bass, Republican of New Hampshire, Sean Duffy, Republican of Wisconsin, and Lou Barletta, Republican of Pennsylvania, had all faced constituent anger of their own over the GOP's Medicare privatization plan. At a town hall meeting in Hillsborough, North New Hampshire, the first six questions Bass faced from constituents were about his vote to privatize Medicare. One attendee pointed out that what the Republicans are doing is pursuing a divide-and-conquer strategy by eliminating Medicare for future generations while keeping it for current seniors. Yeah, that'll get the seniors to vote for this plan, and the ones who are wanted to vote against it, it'll divide them, cause them to be angry with each other, right? Divide-and-conquer, wedge issues always work for Republicans. At a town hall in Shell Lake, Wisconsin, Duffy got into a heated exchange with constituents when he insisted that Ryan's plan does not effectively replace Medicare with a voucher system. But attendees repeatedly corrected him. Later, Duffy got huffy, frustrated by his constituents' questions about his presentation. He told attendees, "When you have your own town hall, you can stand up and give your presentation." Quote unquote. Yesterday, constituent anger reached a boiling point at a town hall in Orlando for freshman Representative Daniel Webster, Republican of Florida, when bedlam erupted as constituents angrily peppered him with questions about his vote for privatizing Medicare. Webster tried to avoid answering many of the questions, and eventually, conservative hecklers fired back at those trying to hold Webster accountable. Police officers flanked Webster and had to tell this quiet crowd to quiet down. There happened not to be, I don't think, any policemen present whenever the Democrats were presenting their plans. This is me talking. But it's amazing that there were policemen present when the Republicans were presenting their plan. Strange, but true. You know, you talk about these issues, and a lot of people don't want to listen or don't care, but sooner or later, whether you like it or not, it's going to come to a town near you. And that always reminds me of this song that I'll play during this brief interlude. We'll be right back with more of the show. That's the next phase with Ice and Friends, 7 to 8:30 p.m. Thursdays. And you can give us a call at 347-945-7040. Always liked this song, but especially now. Kitchen sink, and all she wants to do is dance. and welcome back to the next phase with Ice and Friends right here Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m. 347-945-7040. And Brother Alpha, if that was you, I'm sorry. I just had to take a little quick break. And if you don't mind, if that was you, 773, give us a call back through. We'll put you right on. As we were discussing the problems that were being had by the Republicans trying to explain their position on the Representative Ryan's budget, which he submitted and the majority of the Republicans signed on to, and I'm sure that's going to create an interesting election for 2012, not only for the President of the United States, but also for Congress, for the senators and representatives that will be running during those elections. And, you know, like I say, politics is going to touch you whether or not you touch it. So all we try to do is to provide you some information. I want to let you know up front, I'm a totally 100% an Obama supporter. I'm a Democrat all the way through, and unless and until I see anything from this president that would cause me to have any doubt about him whatsoever, I just want to let you know that I'm 100% true, thoroughbred Democrat. I think the guy's doing a tremendous job, and I can only wish him all the best. But since I didn't, McCall didn't come back through, let me take a look at this article that we have pulled up, and I'll be checking back to the phone lines. Hopefully you'll get a call back through, but if not, let me take a look at this. This is an interesting perspective. In addition, these are all contributing factors to the 2012 election, and my opinion is simply that the president and the Democrats have tried their best to negotiate with, quote-unquote, the Republicans in Congress. I don't like negotiating with Republicans. I really, personally, I don't like Republicans. I don't hate them, but I really don't like them. I think they're very disingenuous. And I think they misrepresent the facts. And I think that they are a sad, sad excuse for having any interest of the American electorate held in any consideration whatsoever. But all these issues are going to be primary issues in coming election times. And I can only hope that you'll apprise yourself of all the information available to you from any resource except the corporate media. And the way I spell corporate media is KKKORPORATE, corporate media. And that's the same way I spell conservative, KKKONSERVATIVE. The way I spell Republican is REPUBLIEKKKON or AN, whichever you prefer. But I'd just like to say, oh, there he is, 773. Brother Alpha, was that you?
Brother Black, how you doing this evening?
All right. Good to hear you, man. I got you. Take it on, brother. I got 14 minutes. Do your thing.
Well, I'm sorry. I called it such a late time. I'm kind of running around.
Dude, anytime you call is just fine, and you know it.
The first thing I want to touch on is that that little give and take between Sharpton and Cornel West. In that exchange, you heard Cornel West go, "Where are the jobs bills then?" What Cornel West failed to disseminate, understand, propagate was that the previous Congress, led by Nancy Pelosi, introduced 15 jobs bills. The Republicans killed them in the Senate. So this is 15 jobs bills that were put through that the Republicans stood against. Let's fast forward to now. They are campaigning on this this budget proposal that is clearly unpopular. It is clearly unpopular with everyone. But are they backing down? No. What they are doing, they are spinning into a lie.
Mm-hmm.
What they are counting on is the fact that they started this early. So now they've got 18 months to turn you around and turn their opinion of their constituents around.
Right.
And what I've seen in their ads are that they're progressively moving to protect Medicare and Medicaid, and they're still telling that we're not going to bother Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
What basically disturbs me so bad is that they lied about jobs and wanting to create jobs. Not one jobs bill has come down the pipe with Republicans.
Right.
What disturbs me even more is that Al Sharpton spoke about those people sitting in the ivory towers that are still
mm-hmm.
sitting. You know, this president was forced, pushed, and he made the worst move. I'll say he made the worst move of his presidency when he brought out that birth certificate.
Uh-huh.
Because now they want his passport application. They want to scrutinize his registering for the army or the military. Everything is fake. You know, his race is an African. Back then it would have been Negro. That's why this is fake. Nothing will ever change their mind. But he caved again. And as you, I am a Barack Obama supporter, full Barack Obama supporter. But over and over again, he's been pushed around, bullied. He caved on public option. He caved on the amount of tax breaks for the stimulus package. He caved on that budget for that year. Now, if they are finding that they can push him and use the leverage of shutting down the government to get him to fight on the wrong battlefield, that battlefield is the battlefield of spending cuts that hurt the poor and needy, that hurt the WIC programs, that cuts off heating assistance to the needy and the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why isn't he fighting on the battlefield of cutting subsidies to the oil and agriculture, cutting down on the amount of military spending? Why isn't he trying to cut spending cuts on, you know, he caved on the tax breaks and he extended them to so-called protect the people and not allow these taxes to go up on the middle class. So he gave in to the upper $250,000. He didn't have to do that. As president of the United States, he has the power to go to the IRS and tell them to hold the tax breaks for the people $250,000 under and let them expire on the $250,000 over. You see, this did not need legislation. All it needed was a strong leader to stand up and use his presidential powers. He has presidential powers that he simply will not use. And now he's been forced to show his papers.
Mm-hmm.
He's been forced to say, I'm a real American. Where in the history of this nation has this ever happened? But he's
mm-hmm.
a black man. And for people who don't understand this dog whistle of racism will dog him throughout his presidency. He wants to be liked by the people who hate him and these bigots. There's nothing he can do to fall into their favor.
Right.
I don't care what he does, but for him to capitulate again, once again,
uh-huh.
he will do it again when it comes to raising the debt ceiling. They are already crafted. They've already crafted the cuts, the draconian cuts that they want.
Right, right.
Throughout that hurt poor people, that
mm-hmm.
hurt old people.
Right.
And, tax increases off the table. You remember what they said? It's a non-starter. There should be a time when this president stands up and he failed miserably with this birth certificate BS. But
you know what? Let me interrupt just a second, though, Brother Alpha. Let me tell you what. I want you to do me a favor. Is I want you to give me the time for your show and all that before you get away. You know, you never do that, man. And I want you to do that if you don't mind. But let me say
this. It's on TrueFlex Network.
Uh-huh.
And it's at 3 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday
mm-hmm.
afternoons,
mm-hmm.
3 to 5.
So I was
and
right.
I also co-host at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time with Janice Graham on Our Common Ground.
And those both are great, great shows, man. Excellent, excellent show. And this will be Saturday, right?
This is on Saturday.
And I think she has a show with Dr. Somebody right now, right, Dr. Deborah?
Well, I also do a Power View on Monday night at 10 o'clock Eastern time.
Man, I got to get up on that. I really got to get up on that, I'm telling you. And I'll get back with you. I'm going to catch you somewhere here before long. But let me throw up a little defense for our brother, for Barack Obama. What I'm seeing, see, Barack Obama doesn't have a natural constituent base. And there are very his supporters are tentative, and whenever the reason that I speak so positively about him is that I don't want to give any supporter any reason to have any doubt. I want every supporter to feel very firmly confident that he will, and he has made to me when Donald Trump was running around, Donald Chump is what I call him, was running around making all these accusations, and now then he presented this guy with it. He presented, okay, you want to see it? Here it is there. So what do you got? Well, you know, and he reminds, you know, but my point of it is that I want to see the emphasis needs to switch from what Obama needs to prove to where is Donald Trump's position papers?
Well, he's not running for president.
Huh?
He's not running for president.
You know, he's raising questions, and I'm like, what are you, how are you, you know, but the corporate media is so involved because they will not address those issues. They continue to go ahead and stretch out the idea, the question, and really people know without a question of doubt the man is legitimate, a citizen of the United States of America. But you know, I don't believe in the term racism. For some reason, there's only one race. This is about color. And if racism was a determinative factor, then people couldn't pass as being white.
But
I understand what you're saying. Go ahead.
You believe in racism.
No, I don't believe in race. Racism, I believe in prejudice, and I believe in discrimination. But when you see racism suggests that there are two races. I don't subscribe to that theory. There's only one race, which is the human race, and the rest of it is about color.
I understand what you're saying.
A lot of these people want to utilize the idea, want to have me submit to the idea that there's two races, a black race. No, there's not. Because once you accept that, then they want to submit to you. Well, then we're superior. No, you're not superior. You're just another human, just like everybody else. Color doesn't make you superior, in my opinion.
Well, that's not the tradition. I understand. Not what we've experienced, and people get racism confused with white supremacy, and that's what we are. We are under white supremacy because at this point in time. They know, and you say, why don't they turn this on Donald Trump? Because Donald Trump is not running. Trump is not running for president. He's being used as a proxy. He's in close contact with this Lee Corsi, who wrote the book Obama Nation, the supporter of the Swift Boaters of John Kerry. This is where this is all coming from.
He sent
investigators to Hawaii, and they're surprised about what they found.
Let me throw this at you right quick. This is what I believe is happening also. Donald Trump is saying these things because he's a New Yorker. He could never play in the South because it's natural, you know, skeptical cynicism about, quote-unquote, Yankees. So what he's doing is he's playing to things that appease and appeal to the people in the South. What he'll be able to do, in my opinion, is to pass whatever he can garner favor from the Southerners to whoever they finally come to have as a selected candidate for president. See, all he's trying to do is strike a lot of tones with the people in the South and get them all leaning his way, and knowing, like you say, that he's not going to run. But then what he can do is transfer, you know, psychologically and emotionally and subconsciously and all this stuff, transfer his support to another individual, which, you know, it's to me, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I'm telling you, if I was the news media, if you were there, I was there, I would say, where is your position papers, Trump? Where are your how do you feel? How are you going to resolve the issues of unemployment, outsourcing, and all this kind of stuff?
Well, let me tell you Let me tell you what he does.
Okay.
Talk about him transferring his support.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be a player. Okay? He talks that craziness about what he will tell China, about what he will tell OPEC. Totally out of the realm of logic when it comes to dealing with these two or three entities. He's wrong about it all, but he can say it because he pushes back.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, let me, something that's real familiar. Excuse me.
He cuts off the debate
and he turns hostile to the people who are questioning him when the questions get tough. He pushes back. And they back down.
Yeah, he
down
just uses it as an intimidating factor.
I'm saying that if he can back them down, the president should be able to back them down. He should have been able to back them down on this birth certificate. He should be able to back them down on raising this debt ceiling. He should have allowed them, and listen to this, he should have allowed them to shut the government down.
You know
and
what?
Then
I'll
take
say
the,
this.
Take blame for shutting the government down and use presidential power to deal with it turn that shutdown government into a draconian presidential move where he threatens to bring all the troops home and shut down military bases afar, end all of these military contracts and basically default on them and declare to reinstate them, you must get this process approved again so he can control it. He did none of that. He caved.
Well, you know, if everything was equal, if the dynamics were the same, if there were 43 prior African American presidents and one Anglo, I would be totally in agreement with you. Obama is shifting the dynamic. He's shifting the paradigm, and it's not an easy thing to do. Hey, Brother Alpha, you know what? We got to continue this conversation. I got 60 seconds. I'm going to catch up with you. I'm going to catch you on that show. I'm going to eat you up. I'm going to do you like your buddy. No, I'll just mess with you. But, hey, thank you so much, Alpha. And one more time. Give me that time. Give me those times, please.
Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern. Saturday evening, 10 p.m. Eastern.
And Monday.
And Monday, Power Views, 10 o'clock Eastern. And we do, Dr. Deborah Napier does a show on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock, at 8 o'clock Eastern on Truthwork. All comes through Truthwork except for the Saturday evening, which is our common ground.
Send me that email, will you?
Will do.
Hey, Brother Alpha, 10 seconds. Thank you so much, brother. God bless you and the family, man. And we'll be talking. Will you call through anytime you feel like, I don't care. You know that, so. Hey, blessings to you, brother. Thank you. All right, talk to you later. That was Brother Alpha, Alpha the Truth Network, and Brother Alpha and Sister Janice Graham. They have a marvelous network of hosts, and they bring a tremendous, as you might say, plethora of topics and pertinent information sources and resources where that you can get not only uplifted and inspired, but you can get yourself informed and encouraged as well. And please find your way to Brother Alpha's show. That's on Blog Talk Radio Saturdays at 2. Let me find it again. It's at 2 p.m. Saturday, and that's Eastern Standard Time. I believe I'm right. Maybe I may have it mixed up, but A-L-F-O. A-L-F-O. And you will be abusing, mistreating yourself if you don't apprise yourself for this particular show. I want to thank you for joining us. Appreciate you being here. And as always, we look forward to seeing you again next week on the next phase with Ice and Friends. Always remember, give us a call at 347-945-7040 if you choose to. Or you can contact us at blakicz.1. At gmail.com. And I'll leave you with this word, Proverbs 22:22 and 23. Do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted at the gate. For the Lord will plead their cases and plunder the souls of those who plunder them. With that said, I bid you a wonderful week. May God bless and be with you. If you believe in God, whom I choose to call my higher power. If not, I just want to wish you well and all the best to you and yours from me and mine. And I want to say, I didn't get a chance, I want to say to my little son, my youngest son, not little, he's bigger than I am, but I want to say congratulations on you finding yourself a job, dude. Keep pushing. Keep it up. Keep it up.
Changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a need, bro. Pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get a track to the kids, to the hell care. One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship them dope, let them deal with brothers. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother that are two distant strangers. And that's how I'm supposed to be. How can they never take a brother if you're close to me? I let it go back to when we played with kids with their names. I wonder what it takes to make this one better place, let's erase the waste. Take the evil out the people, they'll be acting right. It's both black and white, it's no crack tonight. And the only time we deal is when we kill each other. It takes skills to be real time to heal each other. And it's always seems ever since we ain't ready to see a black man thing. It ain't a secret of the seal, the fact of penitentiary black, and it's filled with black. Some things will never change. So I know another way, but you're bringing in the dope. Now tell me what the mother to do. Being real, don't appeal to the brother in you. You gotta operate the easy way. But you made it in a sleazy way. Sell a crack to the keys.
old way wasn't working, so it's on us to do what we gotta do to survive.